south of the Mason-Dixon. This is the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. Here is your host, Brian McClanahan.
Welcome back to the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. This is your host, Brian McClanahan, and this is episode 306, covering the week of April 25th through April 29th, 2022. Glad to have you back on the program. Very glad to be here. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, like our Gab page, and subscribe to our YouTube page. YouTube page is great because we put up all of our old summer school lectures there and any other of our lectures that we have, scholars conferences and other things. Also, we have our Abbeville U videos there, which of course are our little 5 or 6 minute videos on a variety of topics. We're doing more of those this year, so you'll see those if you subscribe to the YouTube page. You can also support the Institute by going to abbevilleinstitute.org. You can give us an email address. We'll give you a free ebook exploring the Southern tradition. Then you get in our email list, and that's how we keep in contact with you. It's how you find out about our Zoom webinars, which we will have another one in May. If you want to catch up on all those old Zoom webinars, go to abbevilleacademy.org. Abbevilleacademy.org. You can purchase old webinars there, and we've got a number of them now, so on all kinds of great topics. But you find out about those through the email list. Also, while you're at abbevilleinstitute.org, click on the donate button and consider a tax-deductible donation to the Institute. It's how we exist. It's how we do what we do. So if you like what we do, you like the podcast, the website, the webinars, the conferences, all the stuff, the mobile app, all that stuff costs money. And of course, your support keeps all those things going. You can click on the shop tab, get our logo and all kinds of great apparel. It's high quality embroidered material, so it's not going to fade. It's an embroidered logo, so it's really nice to have. Also, you can download our mobile app. Just go to your app store, whether it's your app store in Apple or your Google Play store, and you can get the mobile app free of charge. That's how you get the Institute on the go. Again, your donation makes all of that possible. And as always, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Let people know you like it. Share our material around on social media. We're not on Facebook anymore, but we are appreciative when you share it around on Facebook because more and more people come over to the website then. And this is how we grow the audience. This is how we keep the mission to explore what's true and valuable in the Southern tradition going. And so let's talk about the material for the week. First of all, this is the end of Confederate Memorial Month or Confederate History Month, however you want to describe it. Most Southern states used to dedicate April to that mission. And I'll never forget, this is done before, but there was one of these little leftist historian twits who put up that he was surprised why Southerners chose April, because this is when they were defeated as Confederate History Month. Well, it's also when, of course, Fort Sumter was fired on, but I don't think he really understands why there's a Confederate memorial then. And in defeat, you often recognize that month, that time period, as a time to reflect and think about what happened. And Southerners have always been interested in, as Sam Irvin wrote, he used to love a poem, a Markham poem that said, defeat shakes the glory out. And Southerners were always interested in that. Southerners are the only people in America that have been defeated. If you think about that logically, right? I mean, you can say we lost the Vietnam War, but Southerners as a group are the only people that were defeated in a major conflict. And of course, because of that, there is a certain amount of pride that goes into being Southern. At least it was for a long time. It was a camaraderie. And the destruction in the South, was so tremendous that, of course, it was a social destruction, a physical destruction, an economic destruction. When I say social destruction, I'm talking about the number of lives that were lost. The economic destruction, it completely destroyed the Southern economy. The physical destruction was tremendous. Cities were burned to the ground. Plantations were lost. Farms were lost. So this was, as Tom Fleming has pointed out in a lecture for the Institute in Stone Mountain several years ago, this was, in many ways, a soft genocide. It really was. And of course, Northerners capitalized on it after the war was over. You even have people like Harriet Beecher Stowe buying a plantation in Florida. And of course, the funny part about that is that she sends her son down there and he starts writing back letters about how they're going to abandon the project because they can't get the workers to work, right? And so they had this Yankee mentality on how labor and working conditions would go in the South, and they became very disillusioned. Of course, they got the plantation for pennies on the dollar because it was essentially confiscated property. So Northerners were coming down to the South in large numbers and, of course, buying plantations and farms and doing other things to try to capitalize on the economic colonial status of the South. And as you know, people like the Kennedy twins and Phil Lee have pointed out, you know, this was reparations. Kennedy's Punished with Poverty is just a great book. And of course, Phil Lee's book on Reconstruction is fantastic. It's a good short treatise on the subject. And it's not Eric Foner-esque, so that's a positive thing to say about it. But you should pick up both of those books, Punished with Poverty, which is published by Shotwell Press, and Reconstruction, Southern Reconstruction by Phil Lee, which is a great book. So when you look at why Southerners celebrate Confederate History Month in April, there's a reason for it, right? Those are the reasons. And of course, this last week we saw Confederate Memorial Day. And Confederate Memorial Day is honored in a couple of states in the South. There's still three states, in fact. There's still some discussion about removing that out in these states. Always, there's always going to be a bill. And generally, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen in some place like Alabama or even South Carolina, but it certainly could. Other things are possible. You know, monuments are coming down all across the South, and people are thinking about getting rid of these holidays or other observations across the South. And so it's not out of the question these things could happen. I've said before, since 2015, when all this madness started, it's been 7 years of this, that nothing is out of the question. I fully believe that almost all of these things are going to be removed or gone at some point. And we're going to run a piece next week by Paul Gottfried, a little talk that he was going to give, but he didn't give, on this and why, you know, he doesn't understand why Southerners don't stand up for these things anymore. Well, there's a certain cultural replacement happening. Southerners, particularly young Southerners, are told that if you support any of these holidays or monuments or anything like that, you're just a racist. And they don't. Nobody wants to be called these things. Nobody wants to be labeled with that simply for supporting something that your family, particularly those that had family at the time in the South, and of course had Confederate ancestors, that your family fought and suffered and died for, many of them. I mean, it's actually evil to say these things, to say that your family members are evil. That in itself is evil, particularly when most of these people, and I have a colleague of mine, in fact, he's spoken at our summer schools, which I'm going to talk about our summer schools a little bit later in this podcast, but spoken at our summer schools. He'll be back at the next summer school. He's very proud of his Confederate heritage, ancestry, and none of his family members who fought were actually abolitionists. they were actively engaged in abolition, trying to free as many slaves as they could in the South, but they were all Confederate soldiers. So where does that fit in? Right? I mean, this is the stupidity of all of these people that run around and have made a career out of this now, because the number of books that are coming out about this topic, it seems like there's, you know, a new essay on this or some new book on this all the time. And the piece that I wrote on Monday singles some of this stuff out. Now, the title of this is Did the Confederacy Oppose the Rule of Law? And this goes back to a tweet by one of these little leftist twits named Kevin Levin. And Kevin Levin has written a book on Black Confederates. And of course, he calls it a complete myth. He ignores any evidence that shows there were actually Black people that supported the South, but they're not soldiers, so they're not really Black Confederates, because the Confederacy didn't call them soldiers, so they're not soldiers, so they can't be Black Confederates. This is his line of thinking, right? This is his argument. And when there's evidence that shows that, well, I mean, these people maybe did support the South or some way, well, we don't know why. They were probably just coerced to do that. So they're not really Black Confederates. Anyways, Levin said that, you know, the fact that Alabama closes its state offices on Confederate Memorial Day shows that they have a disregard for equality under the law. So that got me thinking about that statement. Did the Confederacy oppose equality under the law? And if you go and watch some recent lectures by Marshall DeRosa, he's actually written a couple of things about this, and then also a couple of great lectures at last year's summer school on this very topic. equality under the law. In fact, the Confederacy believed in equality under the law. There's a lecture that he gave, and it was entitled Josephine, a Slave versus the State. Now, you have to understand, the Confederacy did not establish a Supreme Court. It was in their Constitution, but they never did. And so the state courts handled all of these cases during the war. And in this particular case, Josephine, a slave, was put on trial for homicide. And the evidence was overwhelming that it happened, but the court dismissed the case on a technicality. Now, she's a slave. So if you're Kevin Levin and you say the Confederacy did not believe in equality under the law, then Josephine would have been just found guilty and that was it. She's let go on a technicality. So certainly the Confederacy believed in equality under the law. This is why I say in this piece that DeRosa's work on this is more heroic than any of these little leftist twits can put out, because he's actually going out and doing the hard work and finding that this is true. There is this stuff actually happened, regardless of what these dopes run around saying on the left. There's another one, and he is a professor at Auburn University, Adam Dombey. Dombey is, I think he's from Atlanta, but he makes claims as a historian. This is one thing these leftists will also do. They'll say things like, as a historian, this is what it means. And he said he made this statement. There's a monument that's under attack in North Carolina. He wrote a book on Confederate monuments. It's actually very well researched. But his whole point is that you had people make racist statements during some Confederate monument dedication ceremony. So then the monuments themselves were dedicated for racism. This is essentially his entire argument. Right, because these people were racist, the monuments then were erected for racist reasons. Even though when you go and you read the inscriptions on the monuments, when you go and you try to dig into why the monument was put there, you're not going to find the direct connection he's making. Correlation does not mean causation, and that's where these people get in trouble with these things. But anyways, his point is, he made this statement in a North Carolina newspaper. It, a Confederate monument in Gaston County, North Carolina, makes claims that are false. For instance, it claims the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery. Let me be very explicit as a historian. The Civil War had everything to do with slavery. There is no Civil War without slavery as an institution. So this is what you would hear among these people. The guy's kind of, if you go out and watch his videos, he's seems to be a pretty strange individual. But anyways, he is making a claim as a historian, like an authority. I'm an authority as a historian. Well, other historians have said other things. So let me be clear as a historian. This monument this monument is not doing what you say it is. Because if you look at the inscription, it's pretty obvious what they said the monument is for. Let me read the inscription on this monument. Confederate Heroes, CSA, erected by the Gastonia Chapter, UDC, and the J.D. Moore Chapter, Children of the Confederacy, the noble service of the Sons of Gaston County is our perpetual heritage, UDC, in memory of the Gaston County soldiers. So, where is the claim that the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery on that monument? Because it didn't say anything? So, that means that they were saying the war had nothing to do with slavery? You see, this is what people like Dombey, or maybe Dumby, this is what people like Dumby do. They're making a claim on this monument. It had nothing to do with slavery. Well, the monument doesn't say anything about a lot of things, right? So this is the interesting part of this. And, when you look at that also, I go into this where he says, the Civil War had everything to do with slavery. And, of course, he cites a 1912 dedication speech to prove that the monument was erected to promote, quote-unquote, white supremacy. But that's not what the inscription reads. That's not why the monument was put there. It's a soldier's monument. And these monuments were established in courthouse squares and other things because that was the public place to put things. You could put them in cemeteries, and there are lots of monuments in cemeteries, but if you wanted to honor the men that had gone off to fight in that community, and they're and a lot of these men never came home, well, then you put it in a public place, and the courthouse was the public place to put it. I mean, this is why these people can't get this. I have no idea. But this is what Dombey and other, you know, leftist academics, this is what they do. So this is where I find this, you know, to be troubling, that you have these people. I mean, Dombey has just been given a tenured position at Auburn University because of that book that he wrote on Confederate monuments in North Carolina. And he was the guy that went out and found the speech by Julian Carr for Silent Sam. He's the one that was doing research and found that and made it a big issue. This is the guy. And so now he taught at the College of Charleston for years, and now he's at Auburn University. But he wrote the book, and I will say, again, the book is well-researched. It's a real academic book compared to Kevin Levin's book, which is not. But Dombey's book is far superior to that. And so probably at some point I'll review it somewhere, whether it's on my podcast or writing a review on it. I don't know what I'll do with it, but somewhere I will. But regardless, this is the issue we have. And of course, that bleeds into things like the attack on VMI, which Forrest Marion did another nice piece on that. The title is, "So VMI Isn't Structurally Racist After All." And when you read this piece, I mean, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing what these people are doing in Virginia and elsewhere. Because when they can't find anything, but the claim has been made, and of course, when the claim is made, people just think this, and then you get all these other things that happen because of that. Whether it's monuments being taken down, whether it's name changes or other things, the claim is made. It's you just spray it out there, and then people run with it. Whether there's evidence to this or not, this is the problem you run into. The other thing I say about Dombey, and I've written on this at the Institute before, is when you look at these speeches that were made, and you say that they're about white supremacy. I mean, look, some these people did use that phrase. They used that phrase, and when they meant that, they said it. And sometimes they would say it, but that's not unusual in late 19th, early 20th century, when most Americans would have believed the exact same thing, not just in the South but in the North. And the thing is, they talked about Anglo-Saxonism, and that phrase, I remember reading a book on Titanic, right, by Ballard, who's the guy that went down and found Titanic. And he said that, this is in the 80s, he said that that Titanic was the result of Anglo-Saxon engineering. Now, does that make Ballard a white supremacist when he's simply pointing out there was a culture involved in this? And generally, that's what these people were talking about when they use the term Anglo-Saxon. It's a culture that they're talking about that goes back to 1215 in the Magna Carta. And they consider this to be a heroic part of Western civilization. And that is the key to understanding that particular term, which is what these people don't get, right? They're so invested in this, in race, they can't understand the nuances of what's being discussed here. And these people were making racist statements like he would suggest, they would use the terms, and they did at times. But when they said things like Anglo-Saxon, it means something else. And so this piece by Forrest Marion is very good. You should go out there and read that one as well. And of course, we have a great piece by Sandy Mitchum entitled God's General. And the thing I like about this piece is that it has the connection in it. It's a piece on Richard Montgomery Gonneau. And he was a Confederate general, and he was a very religious man. In fact, baptized men during the war. But the thing I like about this is it shows the connection that the American War for Independence has to these Confederate soldiers and Confederate leadership. His great-grandfather, John Allen Gonneau, was born in New Jersey as a Baptist preacher. In fact, he joined the Continental Army and was known as the Fighting Chaplain. And George Washington had him, Gonneau, officially declare the Revolutionary War over in a prayer. Now, this is the great-grandfather of this Confederate general, and somehow these people are un-American. That's the thing that always gripes me. Because you see, at the Institute, and this is something I pointed out in the piece on Monday, the Institute is dedicated to looking at 400 years of Southern history. That includes people like John Allen Gonneau, eventually who the Gonneau family moved to Kentucky, fought in the War of 1812. So Gonneau is from New Jersey, but then the family moves to Kentucky. And so that's the lineage of these people. That's where this stuff matters. This is the 400-year history I'm talking about, that you have Americans. These are people who are purely American. They're American. They're not anti-American. They're purely American. This is why we're working on the 1607 Project, Virginia First, because the idea is to show that all of this, all of these things are tied together. This is purely an American way of looking at the world, and it's unfortunate that we live in an environment where if you talk about Confederates, so these people are anti-American. They're American Nazis. John C. Calhoun's an American heretic. This is just garbage. These people are purely American. And it's a sad state of the academy when this is what we have. And for years, people recognized that these people were American. It was maybe a view of America that had fallen out of favor, or that a different view of America was triumphant, which is what actually Gary Gallagher says in his book, The Union War. It was a northern version of America that would become ascendant. It's, you know, north over south. And it wasn't just the victory of Union soldiers. It was also a cultural victory over the South, and an economic victory, and a political victory. This is why Dunning's version of Reconstruction is superior to anything else that was published, you know, even the Foner's book, because it was more comprehensive than Foner. Foner focuses on one thing, which essentially is race, but there's so much else to Reconstruction. Now, he does cover other things in his book here and there, but not in the way that Dunning did it and the Dunning School did it. And then we had a piece by Kerry Roberts this week on Friday, Why Were the Articles of Confederation Dissolved? And this is a long piece. And the reason it's here, it's because it was produced at our very first summer school in 2003. And so we do have a summer school coming up, July 5th through 8th at Seabrook Island, South Carolina. The topic is the Southern Tradition. And these are the kind of things that we have because of the summer school. We're transcribing some of these old summer school lectures because they are very, very good, and it adds to the discussion of the Southern tradition, what it means, the political tradition. In this particular case, the 2003 summer school was on American decentralization. It has some lectures in there by Ross Lentz, who is no longer with us, and of course he wrote fantastic stuff on the middle of the 19th century. He was a Calhoun scholar, and when you have this archive of material, and if you go out to our app or to our webpage and you go to the video and audio on our webpage and go to lectures, these lectures are there free of charge, same thing on our app. But it's nice to have a transcription of this, and this is one of the talks that Kerry Roberts gave. And of course, the Articles of Confederation are an interesting part of American constitutionalism. And Roberts makes the case in this particular talk that it was essentially a lie that led to the dissolution of the Articles of Confederation, that they weren't the problematic document that people have often made them out to be, that they actually worked fairly well. And it was the nationalists who were pressing for a new central government because they weren't getting their way. Essentially, that's it. You had a push to get rid of the Articles because the nationalists were not getting their way in this general government, and they needed to have more centralized power. So I find this lecture fascinating. Again, it's about a 7,000-word piece, so it's a long piece. But if you really want a nice, succinct history of the debates and conflict leading into the Articles, this is it. And of course, Dr. Roberts wrote his dissertation at South Carolina on this early federal period. And so this was his specialty in graduate school. And so I found this lecture to be very good. And he always speaks at our summer schools. He'll be there again this year, I think, to do one or two lectures. I think he'll be there. I'm not 100% certain on that. But we have some other great scholars that are going to be there this year. Of course, some of the usual suspects, but we have a couple of new people that are going to be there. And so this is going to be a good summer school. And so if you want more information about that, just go to our webpage, abbevilleinstitute.org, and click on that events tab in the middle of the page. We also want students. If you are a graduate student, an undergraduate student, a Vance High School student, and you listen to this podcast, or if you listen to this podcast and you know people that are those people, we do have scholarships. And so if you want to go to the summer school, you should apply for a scholarship to attend and to find, again, go to the webpage, click on the events tab, go to that, click on the event, which is the 19th annual summer school, and then there's contact information for Dr. Livingston there. Or, of course, you can email me at mcclanahan@abbevilleinstitute.org and let me know you want to attend. If you're one of these students, we want you there. We want graduate students. We want undergraduate students. That's how we keep this thing moving forward into the future. We've got to have young people getting involved in this. And so if you're interested in the Southern tradition, and it's something that you want to explore, it's something that you're working on, and you're of like mind with us, then come on out to a summer school. And we're going to have some other events for students too. I will say this now. We will be having some future events, some Zoom events, and some other things that will involve students. So keep an eye out. Get on that email list and keep an eye out for these things, because that is, again, something we try to do, is encourage scholarship and young scholarship in the area of the South and the Southern tradition. So the last thing we had for this week, it's a piece by Brandon Meeks again. He always, every 2 weeks, we're putting out these little short stories by Brandon Meeks. They're just so good, and it's great to have some literature. And the title is The Legend of the Dogwood. And it's about his grandmother again. And talking about family, that's the connection, right? You have Gano, the connection, the family connection. Gano going through generations, and Sandy Mitchum's piece on that. It shows the family connection in the South. And when you talk about Confederate Memorial Day, and you talk about Confederate Heritage or Confederate History Month, and you look at the connection, the individual connection, that's what it means. This is what it meant for Southerners. There's a family tie to it. And defeat and depression, there's a family tie to that in the South. That's important. That family connection matters. And so when you have a piece like this, and I'm not going to read it this week, but it's very, very good and funny. He's such a good wordsmith, and able to put a story together in the mind's eye, that you should really be reading everything we put up there by Brandon Meeks. He is a minister, and he's from Arkansas. And he talks about the best part of it is when just to give you a summary, he chops down his grandmother's dogwood trees. And of course, his grandmother is livid over this. And she makes him go get a switch. And this is something that is often, remarked in the South, pick your switch, go out there and pick the stick that you're going to be hit with. You're going to get a spanking over this. And so he describes it as a pirouette. He learned later that this dance that they were doing, as, she's chasing him around with a switch, they later would call that a pirouette. It's so good. But this is, who doesn't have a grandmother in the South, or, in the family that would do these kinds of things, and it's just so good. And I remember, Clyde Wilson talking about this with his grandmother, and, things that people would do, and she would say, "We don't do those things. We don't do those things," right? So there's something that, some kind of, Yankee cultural imperialism or something ridiculous. We don't do those things. And that's important, that family tradition, that connection, right? You just don't do those things. I remember when I was a kid, it was, go around to restaurants nowadays everywhere, and men are wearing ball caps inside everywhere you go. And of course, when I was a teenager, I wanted to wear a ball cap all the time. And my grandmother would just get on me incessantly about that. She was around, you didn't wear a hat and hat. No matter how bad your hair looked, if you had hat head or whatever, you just didn't wear that ball cap. And it stuck with me. It's something that you just didn't do. And so, of course, as I got older, I'm not going to follow that. But now that I'm, as I got, into my 20s, I'm not going to follow. I'm going to wear a ball cap everywhere I want. And it was just me being ridiculous, because now I look around and I see all these grown men. They're at the table. They're wearing a ball cap wherever they are. They just wear hats wherever they go. They don't take their hat off anymore. And that was her trying to say, we just don't do these things. This is not what you do. It's not polite company. That's an important part of the Southern tradition, understanding what's polite company, manners, morals. Used to be the South was the place of manners, and manners matter. And so this is where the Southern tradition is just bigger than some war or the effects of the war, and even those things are important, but it's that family connection, the ties. The war matters because of the ties to family. And that's what those monuments are about. That's why it's imperative that they stay there. And these names and places for people that had a tie, it's a common history, it's a common culture. And we're going to talk more about this again next week a little bit with this Gottfried piece, but we'll save that for next week. All right, so that's the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. Until next time, good day.